This is WHTC in Holland. It's time now for Talk of the Town, the program in which you, the listeners, participate with your telephone calls. Our Talk of the Town number is 395-1450, and our guest this morning is Dr. Tom Burns. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Joe.
And what do you got on your mind this morning?
Well, you know, we could talk just about anything, and it would have something to do with medicine or health, wouldn't it?
I think so.
Well, politics or whatever. And we're seeing a big change in what we are culturally, and that has its impact on individuals that really eventually it ends up where doctors have to deal with it as well.
Right.
Because stress is higher, and I brought this up before, stress is higher than it's ever been. The problem with stress is that when you can't get away from it, there's no resolution. It has profound effect on heart disease, on diabetes, on hypertension. Even cholesterol goes up with under stress.
Mm-hmm.
So we are right now, I think, in a culture that many, many individuals will find out as this whole health system starts to roll out. It's going to reveal a lot of things that is uncomfortable, but is not really good medicine at all. You know, there was a time, and this has been kind of a cultural change, but there was a time when the doctor could actually accept the insurance or not. And if they didn't, the patient got the check, and the doctor could just bill the patient. And that was great for patients that were financially secure because the doctor got that fee, and the doctor then could make the decision on which patients that did not have money, and he would then, many of us would then see patients for very little, or if we knew the patient didn't have money, we'd just accept the insurance. And people that didn't have insurance or money, we could do free because of how we could bill people that had financially secure.
Mm-hmm.
The early 90s, that kind of changed. And so even those individuals are multi-millionaires or whatever, the doctor had no choice. And so physicians have always wanted to help people that were in need, and we still do. And that's going to change because what's happening now with this program, people are going to find out that the poor individual that's going to get the real brunt of this are going to be young couples, young workers that choose to work and develop a program and look on their future as building that up from the beginning in their marriage or their early life. But these individuals are going to be just inundated with premiums that they will never be able to really put another $1,000 aside for something. They're going to have to find out how they have to have two jobs in order to be self-funding.
They'll never be middle class, so to speak.
And this, now we know that was by design. This is a design that was thought out before and to be implemented legally so that they can take power of that money. And just think, we're talking about $1.5 trillion a year.
Mm-hmm.
And we just watched if the numbers are true, we just watched where bringing this system online, which many experts could have probably done for $1 million, has cost $400 million. And so you always ask in government how much legal money laundering goes on that you and I as citizens have to handle. And that's
right.
That's a sad case, and we always want to be as loving and as humble and as giving as we can, but it's going to be stressful for those that choose to work and choose to finance our country, which we all want to do. But the data already, I think yesterday, came out that over 35% of the individuals getting unemployment or welfare don't want to return to work now because it's financially secure. So we're building a new culture of who's willing to work and pay for it, and that's going to hurt medicine tremendously. The other thing is kind of, to me, having trained at Mayo, you know, that is a system like Johns Hopkins or Mass General or University of Michigan or Cleveland Clinic, all these systems that have been around for 100 years or more that are honed down to almost being perfect administration of medicine and high quality, state of the art. But it's obvious that none of these individuals had gone to these experts in medicine that have kept costs down and quality high for any input into what we're going to be facing.
We have a call here. Good morning, you're online with the doctor.
Have you ever considered that a lot of the fault is with the employers that refuse to let people come back to work if they have problems? And it's not the fact they don't want to work, it's that their job is gone.
Well, I'm just reiterating a survey. It was done, I think, yesterday.
That
35 or 40% of those that can work say they don't want to return. But
well,
the other thing is, I think it's
the fact that you're going to lose that job because they don't want you there if you're not perfect, especially if it's a factory job where you're having to do lifting and things, and so they refuse to let you return to work, or if they do, they find a way to get you out. And I've seen this happen to many people, myself included. I had surgery on my hands. I wanted to come back in some way, and I needed a lot of time, and they told me if you stay beyond your 13 weeks, you're gone.
Well, that, you know, I'm sure that there are cases like yours that you would have some.
There are cases like mine.
Well, you have,
especially in the factory world.
Well, it's interesting that there are at least three companies in the area that cannot hire enough patients or enough employees right now.
They want young, able people. They do not want people who are getting a little older and not able to do the stressful.
Well, I guess I can't speak against employing. I'm talking about what I'm saying is that in the case of the health industry, for me as a physician,
right,
we're going to see more patients stressed, and
that there are people out there who would have returned to work if they could have returned to work.
Well, it's interesting that. That's apparently you're right, because it was only 40% of them that didn't want to return. So you got 60% that would return if the jobs are available.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But even 40% saying they don't even want to go back.
Well, I think that's due to the fact that they're not very secure in their jobs anymore. It's a right to work state, and if they decide they don't want to, you're out. You have no protection,
at all.
And if you don't have that money to depend on,
then what's I guess I we
you're out of luck.
We got to get on to medicine, but I would just ask you to think about the other. I guess you need
just
to call
to
the
let
other.
You know what happens out there, because I don't think a lot of people are aware.
Well,
that
I think we're all
are as much to fault as people.
We're I guess I
thank
would
you.
I have now. Thank you very much. That's a case where I would like to find out. I wish I knew what the other 60% thought of, because they 60% of the people wanted to go back to work if a job's available, would, and there's 40% that didn't want to go back to work. So, but anyway, that just tells you that doctors, we're all facing that. We're going to face that in medicine, because we don't have enough physicians today to handle everybody's needs. It's very difficult to find a physician today. And so what about the physicians that say, well, we're not willing to work 80 hours a week, which many of us do, 48 by the time we see patients, sit on a computer to get paid. You put 60 to 80 hours a week in, how much is that going to hurt the number of physicians, people going into medicine as well as staying in medicine? So it's going to have some fallout, but as we always have done in this country, we've always responded to it. So I think it's going to be a question, how much time will it take, how much change in the health system and certainly the insurance coverage, and how many individuals are going to be have an advantage or an incentive to hold a job and to fund the insurance program, and how many are not going to. Because sooner or later, we have to fund it.
Right, so.
Okay. Located next to Paul's Pharmacy on the south side and across from D&W Food Store on the north side. And remember, all of the workers are volunteers, and your purchases buy Bibles for the people in Mexico.
We're here with Dr. Burns today, and if you have a question for the doctor, you may call us at 395-1450. And our line is open at the moment, so give us a jingle.
One thing I want to kind of touch today is immunizations.
Yes.
You know, I have patients come in, and of course we ask them always if they've had their flu shot. Keep in mind that immunizations is probably the second most important thing in keeping disease, especially infectious disease and contagious disease, in check.
Mm-hmm.
Flu is a virus that mutates every year, and we never know exactly how powerful it's going to be. I happen to be one of those that in my family history can say that we were directly affected by that. My grandfather died in the 1918 flu epidemic at the age of 28. And many of us say, well, we don't get the flu vaccine because it made us sick last time we got it. Well, the fact is there's only about one of the shots that are one of the immunizations that can make you have some illness, and that's the nasal spray that has attenuated, not a dead virus. But the thing is that for you and I, immunizations do, in fact, hold down the spread of disease. And even in flu, if I don't get the shot, my immunization or my protective immunological system may fight it off. But in the fact that I have not gotten the vaccination, or have not, if I was one of those individuals, I could still carry that virus to, even though I'm not very symptomatic, I could carry that virus and give it to other people. So immunizations is not only to keep you and I so we don't get as sick, but also that we don't spread the virus.
Right.
Every year, some individuals will die from that. Now, the other thing is I want to talk to the older patients in that, or all of them, but especially the older patients. I happen to be one physician. I'm sure you'd have to hunt a lot to find someone that has seen or had a tetanus patient and a diphtheria patient. And so those are two diseases we've heard about, it getting your tetanus shot. Well, when we give tetanus, we also give diphtheria. And those two are very important because before the diagnosis can be made sometime, the toxin can already be can affect you and cost you your life. And when I was just finishing med school, headed on to finish my residency at Mayo, I was part of a team that had a 19-year-old boy in Michigan come in and never got immunized from his childhood on because he was a disabled child. It didn't go to school, and he ended up with a strep throat, which is always with diphtheria, and was not given the antitoxin, and he ended up dying. Even though he got better in 3 days from all the penicillin we gave him, the infectious disease expert in charge then decided not to give the antitoxin. When I was at Mayo, an 80-year-old woman that was had scratched her foot on a little scraper in the barn, came in, and they gave her first tetanus shot. She'd never gotten tetanus, but didn't give her antitoxin. The next week she came in, and she survived that, was on a ventilator. So the thing is that those two diseases, what I want to impress on the listeners, those two diseases are very, very dangerous if we get them, because almost no one would probably detect that before it was too late and give the antitoxin. So the good thing about tetanus and diphtheria, most people probably have antibodies for 20 years. We advise individuals to try to get a booster every 10 years, and if you go to the emergency room or get cut, you'll get it after 5 years, because there's 5 to 10% of the individuals may not have antibodies. So that's one immunization that you want to just make sure you check your records. Because it's amazing how many individuals show up for other things, and you then ask them, and they don't recall when they had their tetanus shot. There is a registry in Michigan that the nurses in all the doctor's office can call and see if you're on that registry, and they can check it on the website. But if they don't have record of it in Michigan, and your doctor does not have a record when you got your last tetanus diphtheria shot, then you really need it. So you might want to ask your doctor when you go in if they have a record when you had your last tetanus shot, mm-hmm. especially if you don't know if you've had it in less than 10 years. The other thing is now for the older patient, remember you, that there's been more encouragement for us to get the whooping cough shot. Well, that's in combination now with tetanus and diphtheria called Tdap, and you may get all three of those because it's almost as cheaper as in one shot to just give those and get you re-immunized. So just for us older patients, just remember that diphtheria and tetanus, we might have had that in the past, but if it's been a long time ago,
right,
just check your own
right.
records.
All right.
Because immunizations still save a lot of lives every year.
All right, I'll look at our weather here, and the weather is brought to you by our good friends at the Wooden Shoe Restaurant, now featuring caramel apple French toast sticks. That sounds good, doesn't it? Well, let's look at the weather. The weather is in for rain today, steady temperature in the mid to upper 50s, and early showers tonight give way to clearing skies and a low of 36. Tomorrow, more sun than clouds and a high of 47. Right now, it is 57 degrees here in the Tulip City. All right, back to the doctor.
Another thing is happening right now. You know, when I first came here, there was no wellness. So I had been kind of a passionate wellness person clear back when I was in graduate school, before I even started med school. But so I started laying the ground for the wellness hall. We had Work Well. We had all those wellness programs. And so under wellness is a big thing, and we know now preventive medicine is less expensive than not. But in the wellness thing, we get labs. And when you get blood studies and you see all those real dark numbers, sometimes they're off a little bit. Like, for instance, if you have a glucose of 101, it may be big, bold print like you have diabetes. But talk to your doctor, because you'll find out that some of those numbers are not really that risky or high risk at all.
Good morning. You're online with the doctor.
Yes, I got a question on something I want to find out about the flu shots. I got a heart problem, a St. Jude valve problem.
Right.
And I was wondering, every year I'm supposed to get a flu shot, or try and miss a year or something, or what I can do?
No, you should get, there's no reason for you not to get a flu shot.
I need one every year?
If every year we should get flu, because the flu that comes every year is assessed in the Orient and finding out what new viruses have been formed that have mutated, and then the serum is made from those individuals in China and the Orient, and then they create the vaccine from that. So every year our flu is different. It's not the same flu every year. It's kind of like go ahead.
And I get a flu shot, and I get real bad sick afterwards, like a day or so.
Well,
that's normal?
No, it's not normal. There may be a few individuals. What you need to talk to your doctor or wherever you go to get the flu shot, just tell them that happens. There are individuals, if you have any sensitivity to egg, you might have a little bit of 2 or 3 days of feeling a little fatigued or a little ill.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah, well, you may have sensitivity to egg, and that may be coming from that. We have no reason to believe that the virus itself, vaccine itself, will make you ill, except the flu virus or flu vaccine that we use in children that you spray in the nose, and that that can make give you a few days of feeling fluish.
Yeah, because I get the shot, I go home, and I lay down. I feel like I got to sleep for a couple days.
Okay.
And
well,
after that, I feel good after that.
Well, when you go in, tell the nurse or tell the individual giving you the shot, or you tell your doctor that, and then they will assess that, and they may give you something to help so you don't get tired after that.
Yeah, because I got to talk to Dr. Smith tomorrow morning.
There you go.
Because I got an appointment with him.
Yeah,
he's supposed to give me the shot at the same time.
Yeah.
I'll talk to him with Dr.
Yeah.
Smith.
Run that by him, and I'm sure he'll explain it to you and give you something to help.
Oh, okay.
Okay, very
Thank
good.
Thank you. Good morning. You're online with the doctor.
Good morning, Juke, and good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
Coming on the air and helping us with some of our questions.
Thank you.
Whether it be medical or political or whatever.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of questions.
They all combine. Well, I have a question for you. I've had family in Mexico,
mm-hmm.
and I've been to a couple other places here in the area where the topic of polio has come up.
Right.
From being in other countries, but I have not heard about it in our country, or maybe it's just not in the news as of yet, but I do know that in Mexico, there are signs of it making an ugly return. Now, part of my question is, how do we recognize it? Do adults, can an adult be a carrier and it not be noticeable and it be transferred through a cough, whatever, like if they were to come from their country to our country and not be detected? And we do know that people in Mexico are not being immunized as we push it here.
Correct.
For many things.
Correct.
I'll cut it off there, but maybe you could enlighten us on some of the things with that. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, that's interesting because polio was, as we know, for some of us that lived in the 50s and that polio, in fact, was a devastating disease. But vaccinations has pretty much eliminated it in America. The polio that is coming in, if it comes in, there, I haven't seen a recent data that shows active polio cases except as they've come in from immigrants or people traveling. Now, we do know that when we look at the travel data, when individuals come to us, for instance, in my case and other doctors that see workers that are traveling back and forth in different parts of the world now, because this is old global economic network now, and so they're traveling a lot, and also individuals that go into countries to on vacations or to see the world as they want to and go into some high-risk areas, third world countries, where there is polio, they have been advised to get a re-immunization, a polio vaccination again if they had it as a child. But why we don't see it in America, it goes in support of our vaccination immunization program, is that with the immunizations of the little kids when they were young, before they started school, for polio. And so we've been able to eliminate this passage of active polio. There are areas in the world now that polio is starting to spike, as this gentleman mentioned, that Mexico happens to be one of it, and that's because those areas, certain areas in those countries that are back in the interior more, they don't get immunized, and so once polio starts, it's easy to pass on to the other individual. So,
but someone who's had polio here can get it again, can't they?
Well, if theoretically you can, but it's unlikely because if you had polio when you were a child, I'm sure that you would have been checked out again and been re-immunized if you needed to. And what we have a lot of times now, I had a couple of those, what we call post-polio syndrome. These are individuals who had polio when they were young,
mm-hmm.
but then they got better, but as they got older, they started to lose the muscle wasting in that, and it's post-polio. It has to do with the degeneration of the nerves and muscles that really were made weak when they were young, and as they got older and aged, they didn't have the normal structure in order to keep that strength there. But the weakness is the first thing that you'll notice in an older person that's had it previously.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's something the doctors can check also. So if you have a question, in response to the gentleman called in, when you're traveling into an area where you know there's been polio, or you're going there, just like if you're heading into Dominican or someplace where they have malaria or typhoid, you want to make sure that your immunizations, vaccination program's up to date, which we frequently have to do when individuals are traveling in other parts,
mm-hmm.
even if they're going on vacation or going into a medical, say, a mission project where they're going into the interior where there is malaria or there is typhoid. And there's certain parts of the world that you can get that information. And for the caller as well as everyone else, you can just go on the website of CDC, the National Center of Disease, and you can just punch in there for travel or other parts of the world and where you're going, and you can get all the data you need to know whether it's polio there. You can just website to search polio, and they can tell you every place in the world that active polio has been detected, and even in our country, whether there's active or resistant polio in our country.
Mm-hmm.
So they can go on the website. CDC, it's one of the government things that we can really say we're glad we have.
Yeah.
Okay? We're not going to argue about that, about our CDC. It's a fabulous place.
Has malaria pretty well under control now?
Well, there are a lot of, there's still malaria in that, you got these areas of the world where you have the mosquitoes, you have the hot weather, they can proliferate, and they can proliferate the virus, and they give it to you when they bite you, and so you can find out that where they're active, and they'll also give you what kind of medicine you're going to need, because there's some areas that are resistant to some of the standard medicines. But in most cases, we got good protection if you're traveling in their area. But if you're traveling in Africa, you're traveling in any of the warm, real hot, warm areas in the tropics, you always want to check and see if they have active malaria. A few years ago, they had some in Dominican, so even going to the Dominican could be a risk. And the thing is, there are a lot of different medicines. Some of the medicines, if you read, they have side effects. But one of the good ones right now is still old standards, doxycycline, which is like tetracycline. It's used for treating. It's used for prophylaxis. It tends not to have as much problem with side effects, except it can make you sun sensitive. So you're going in the tropics where there's a lot of sun, and so doxycycline, if you're going there, if you're going to be a short period of time, it's not a big issue. But we have medicines at work. We have all kind of different medicines, and we got medicines for the resistant malaria.
So your advice today is get your shots.
Main thing, if you get vaccination for all those standard things like your tetanus and the flu shots are very important for all of us keeping those diseases under control in the USA. And if you're traveling out of the country, check with your doctor, check with your hospital if you want, check with a local travel doctor, or just go on CDC and get the message. And our message to the callers is thanks for the calls. Again, we just God bless America. We thank we're very fortunate to be in Western Michigan, where we're the best place in the country, they say. So you and I just didn't realize that, and we should. We should be thankful. So
thanks.
One more thing: if we're still alive next month, Juke and I will see you again.
Very likely.